short ball, Babbitt moves back and falls scarcely past square leg.
So this is cricket.
Victory to the Australians by 8 wickets.
Welcome to episode 4 of the Summer of Cricket with Straubs and Schnew. That's right, we're back for the fourth innings. The first test is nearly over. We're hoping to put up one last stand and come home strong. This one, in stark contrast to a test analogy, is going to be a little bit of a BBL preview special. But first, it's a big welcome to my co-host, Vishnu. Vish, welcome on for episode 4.
Hello, Straubs. How are you?
I'm not too bad. I'm enjoying a bit of day-night cricket. We've got the first day of the Brisbane Test going on in the background as we fire through this episode. How about yourself?
Yeah, doing pretty well. It's raining in Canberra, so no cricket training for me. But yeah, it's been good watching the Aussies take on the Pakistanis from Brisbane.
It's always good, bit of cricket to watch. Even if you've got something to do, a little bit of test cricket in the background is always nice to watch.
Yep, so much better than Christmas movies.
Oh yeah, yeah, Christmas movies, apart from Die Hard, which I maintain is definitely a Christmas movie.
Of course it is.
And Christmas Vacation with Chevy Chase. That's about the only two I can stomach. I watch both of those every year, but give me live sport, particularly cricket this time of year, and I absolutely lap it up. And we're going to have plenty of it over the next few weeks, as we intimated. The BBL, the Big Bash League, is coming back for its sixth incarnation. The defending champions, my Sydney Thunder, back to look at defending the title, something that I don't believe has actually been done from memory. I don't think anyone's actually defended the title. I know the Scorchers won 3 and 4, didn't they? So
they did. Yeah.
I think it was the Sixers, the Heat, and then the Scorchers won 2 in a row, and then of course the Thunder brought all our BBL dreams to life last year with a phenomenal victory. But we'll jump straight into it. I want to go through all the teams just briefly, have a bit of a look at what we think is going to come from each side. We'll start with the Renegades, captained by Aaron Finch. And plenty of big new names and changes after a pretty disappointing incarnation last year for the Renegades. One of your two previous hometown teams, Fish, what do you see for the Renegades in BBL 6?
Yeah, it's time to start winning games. Hopefully, the key ins, I suppose, Brad Hogg. Hopefully will spin us a few wickets. Other than that, I think potentially the loss of Chris Gayle could be a big problem, but he hasn't really done too much for them the last couple of years. Andrew McDonald as coach should bring some fresh ideas. Mm-hmm. He's I suppose work wonders with Victoria, so hopefully that works out.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for me, the guy that I'm more keen to see than anyone in that side is Chris Tremaine. He sort of spent a bit of time with the Blues, spent a bit of time with the Sydney Thunder in the BBL on the fringes, didn't really crack through. He's gone down to Victoria, and his game seems to have gone to the next level. I think he could be a huge part of this BBL season for the Renegades.
Yep, and as always, James Pattinson to, hopefully get some early wickets in pretty much each and every game.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that the batting lineup isn't great for the Renegades. Aaron Finch, Tommy Beaton, Tom Cooper, Callum Ferguson.
We've got Cam White there.
Yeah, Cam White as well. It's not a terrible batting lineup, but the strength of this side is in its bowling. Yeah, you got Xavier Doherty, Brad Hogg, Pattinson. As you said, Pattinson, Rimmington, Peter Siddle, Chris Tremaine, and of course a few of them will depend on availability as well. If Wade's Matty Wade, who's also there, may be away, so I think Peter Neville will probably have the gloves more than anything. But it should probably be an improvement on last year, based on the fact that as you said, despite Chris Gayle sort of being noted as a key out, it seems to me that he's sort of mentally checked out of playing cricket.
Yep.
Full stop.
And they got Dwayne Bravo and Sunil Narine as their key imports. So it's a relatively balanced squad, but whether or not they can get into the final will be, you know, remains to be seen.
Yeah, absolutely. Finish fifth.
Because they haven't got anyone who's, you know, known as like, well, I suppose they've got Finch, but, you know, especially like his one day form, if that continues, then he's not very reliable.
Yeah, he can be a match winner, but he can also be a cheap wicket if he decides not to hang around. But we'll roll across to the crosstown rivals, the runners up last year after
my team,
your team, your Stars men,
yeah.
The side that conveniently enough for myself copped a hiding from the Thunder in the final last year, the Melbourne Stars, an
that
unchanged lineup. It was embarrassing. Well, it was thoroughly enjoyable on my end because I was convinced we were going to screw it up, but no changes for the Stars. Settled lineup. Stephen Fleming returns as coach. David Hussey, the captain. The imports Kevin Peterson and Luke Wright. You've got to be pretty happy with that. Obviously, to make the final last year and retain the whole squad's a good sign.
Yep, it's a good sign. You know, it's backing them in for another year to improve upon last year's performance. But if I think about this from like a squad kind of regeneration thing, there aren't many young and upcoming players in that squad. Probably other than Marcus Stoinis and Tom Triffitt. Everyone else is pretty much Seb Gotch, I suppose. But mostly they're quite known quantities.
Yeah, so, very experienced lineup.
Yeah. I don't know if having that much experience is, good for them, but I suppose everyone knows what they can do and now's the time for them to kind of show it.
Absolutely. I think the big thing that might hold the Stars back, and I think they go into the BBL this season as the favourites, but availability is going to be the big issue for them. Peter Hanscom could well miss the first four games with test caps. They might farewell Glenn Maxwell, James Faulkner, Adam Zampa, and potentially even John Hastings to ODI duty throughout the BBL. Hastings has also got a bit of a knee concern. So there could be a lot of key guys that get pulled out of that squad. Both the imports as well, Kevin Peterson and Luke Ryder, very experienced, but been in the BBL a number of times, but probably need to step up and be game winners.
Yeah, Luke Wright certainly is that. KP has that potential. Whether or not KP can do that, twice a week, this year, I suppose, will be the test of his skill and longevity and fitness. Mm-hmm. But they had a pretty decent weekend out in New Zealand last weekend. Things are looking on the up.
Now, the one you mentioned him briefly as one of the young guys sort of coming through, but the guy to watch for me is going to be Marcus Stoinis. Young opening batsman, very handy bowler, is a bit of a late change with the ball as well, can take wickets. He's one that I think could sort of be on the Australian radar for T20 and ODI selection in the near future as well. So he's certainly got a chance to stake a claim in the BBL this summer.
Yeah, he's that probably in that third rung behind Mitch Marsh, James Faulkner and Moses Enriquez in regards to, the pecking order for the national side for the all-rounder spot. But, yeah, having those three kind of match winners in the squad certainly helps.
Oh, yeah, you can't complain with that. Rolling on to the next outfit, they finished third in the BBL last year. Had a great during-the-season record, 7 wins, just the 2 losses, but sort of fell away as the Thunder and the Stars went for it. But the Adelaide Strikers, captained by Brad Hodge, coached by Jason Gillespie. This is a very interesting side for me. They've brought in Chris Jordan from England and Kyron Pollard from the West Indies and Ben Dunk from the Canes, the Hurricanes.
Ben Dunk, he's the big name.
Yeah.
I almost think so.
That's a phenomenal pickup. Now, I mean, they lose from last season's squad. They've lost Alex Ross, Mihailijai Wardner, and Abdul Rashid. But Ben Dunk is alone can win T20 games. This is a guy who can take games away from someone. And it's mind-boggling to think back to the early incarnations of the BBL when he played with the Thunder, and he was a laughing stock. He was terrible. He was one of the guys that we sort of took on as one of those affectionate guys you sort of give a bit of stick to, but deep down you're like, no, he's terrible. And he's one of the best T20 batsmen in Australia at the moment, for mine.
Yeah, he certainly should be playing in the T20 side for Australia, but looking further into that squad, I think no real, notable names. Probably Brad Hodge being the most recognised T20 specialist. Travis Head, not really too sure if he'll play as many games this year in the BBL, given his rise to the international scene. But certainly gives an opportunity to the likes of Jake Lehman and some of the other, Jake Weatherald as well, to really step up. Wes Agar, could make a name for himself.
Yeah, absolutely.
He has a few good games as well.
I think it's a side that will rely on one or two unknown quantities really making the step up. I like Kane Richardson. I think he's very economical, takes the occasional wicket at T20 level, so I like the fact that he's there. And I don't mind Benny Loughlin, the big Queenslander, either. So, I think they'll be there or thereabouts again, the strikers. But, as you said, Travis Head, and whether he's sort of in or out, depending on his ODI selection, could be a big one there as well. But on to the next outfit, the Brisbane Heat. Captain Brendan McCullum, coached by Dan Vettori, who's one of my all-time favourite cricketers. New guys in are Brendan McCullum, Alex Ross, and Manus Labuschagne.
Are we just calling him Manus?
Oh, yeah, we're just calling him Manus. Yeah. Big Labu. Yeah. Manus Labu. They have lost James Hopes, who's retired, and the West Indian Lendl Simmons. This is an interesting side. They finished sixth last year in the BBL. Didn't have much of an impact, obviously, but a lot of young guys, a lot of unknown quantities at this level. Your Jason Forrest, who spent some time with the Thunder as well, and very much fell in that Ben Dunk category where he copped a bit of grief. Young Sammy Heaslett as well, Penrith Cricket Club's finest, Josh Layla. But probably one of the potentially most devastating T20 batsmen in the competition, Chris Lynn, who will have all eyes on him as always.
Can you just imagine that? Chris Lynn and Brendan McCullum?
Oh, if those
going
two,
for it?
If those two tee off together, that's 220 plus if those two were to tee off and bat 20 overs.
Although, they do seem to have an abundance of, I wouldn't say slow batsmen, but potentially slow batsmen. Alex Doolan, Joe Burns, Manus Labuschagne, and Big Manus. if they don't come up with the goods early on, there might be a lot of dot balls. But who are you looking at in their squad to get them the wickets?
Yeah, well, I was just sort of thinking that myself. I don't mind Andrew Feckerty and Luke Feldman, the big fella there, can sort of steam in. But if those two don't take wickets early, I think they could be in a bit of trouble. Josh Layla is a decent economical sort of bowler at T20 level, but he's not a devastating taker of wickets. He's not going to decimate a batting lineup. So I think they're going to rely a lot more on getting off to good starts with the bat trying to keep things as tidy as possible for as long as possible with the ball. I don't think there's too many match breakers with the ball in hand, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think they've got... Yeah, Samuel Badgley can probably take a few wickets. He bowls off-spin, yeah?
But so I think he's the offie from the West Indies, isn't he?
West Indies, yeah. But other than that, Mitchell Swepson bowls medium quick, yeah. I think, they're almost going to be a win-toss bat team.
Yeah, I think they have to be.
Regardless of surface.
Yeah, I don't think they've got many other options. I think you whack McCullum and probably Doolan or... I was just completely mind blank there.
Burns.
McCullen or Doolan or Burns at the top of the order and just try and make sure that you get off to a good start and leave yourself enough in the bag to come home hitting.
Yeah, plus every day, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you score a decent score, any bowler in the world can look good if they keep it reasonably tight, but I don't think there's a lot to fear with the bowling lineup, to be honest with you.
Unlike the Hobart Hurricanes.
Yeah, this is my sort of second team. Hobart, as I've mentioned previously, is my favourite city in Australia. It is a phenomenal place. We got on the cane train, as they call it, down there very early on. Bought myself a Hurricanes hat when we were there for the cricket and was very much on board. And they've got one of my favourite players of all time in Kumar Sangakkara back on board as one of the key imports. They've matched him with Stuart Broad from England, and Hamish Kingston coming in from the strikers. Tim Payne remains as captain, and again, one of my favourite players of all time, George Bailey, who I love Bales. This is a relatively strong side. Finished seventh last year, but I don't think they're going to be that far down the pecking order this time around.
Yeah, as you're saying, most people probably love Kumar Sangakkara. Most Aussies probably hate Stuart Broad. So, They've kind of neutralised the Stuart Broad effect by making sure they keep Sangers.
It's a PR move.
But, man, that's a strong and balanced lineup. Sean Tate, Stuart Broad opening the bowling, probably Sangers and Payne opening the batting, Bailey, Dan Christian...
I think they will miss, and we mentioned him as one of the key guys for the other side, but I think they'll miss Ben Dunk.
Yeah.
But I like Clive Rose, and I like Sam Rainbird as well. I think those are both guys that can make a big step up. So I like this Hurricane squad. I think they're going to be in for a bit of a tilt, to be honest with you.
Yeah, they probably should be looking at making the finals. But, yeah, given what happened to them last year, they probably want to make sure they are... I don't know if they want to start, you know, like a house on fire, but they certainly want to finish stronger than they did last year.
Yeah, they'll be looking for a lot of consistency. I mean, even you look at Sangakkara last year in the BBL, scores of 0, 1, 3, 4, and 6.
Yeah.
So he'll need to be a much bigger performer. I like the thought of Dan Christian. He's 33. He's been around a long time, but you still close your eyes and see that big 115-meter plus 6 that he hit at the Gabba. That's one of the cleanest and biggest hits I've ever seen. And if he can do that, plus chip in with some wickets or two around someone like Broad, I think they'll be there or thereabouts on the cusp, sort of on the fringes of the finals almost.
Yep, that's where they're probably hoping to be. But it's a good squad, but we'll see, especially given what happened last year.
Does have to click as well. As we saw last year, they had a relatively strong squad last year, and it really didn't click. So that'll be the most important thing this year, is almost making sure that things settle down and there's a bit of rhythm there. They'll be looking for something similar way out west at the Furnace, the Perth Scorchers, captained by Adam Voges, coached by one of my all-time favourite batsman, Justin Langer,
yeah.
Lang, I love Lang. He's one of the guys I absolutely adored growing up and still love the guy. Key-ins, Ian Bell and Mitchell Johnson. Great to see Mitchell Johnson back and having a crack for the Scorchers. They do lose Brad Hogg, the long-time man out there, to the Renegades, and Michael Carberry, who from memory didn't have much of an impact on them last season. The two imports are both English, the aforementioned Bell and David Willey. This is a relatively strong squad, very West Australian-centric squad. They've sort of stuck with a lot of their Warriors guys, which they've done in the past. So you've got your Cam Bancrofts and Jason Behrendorfs, Hilton Cartwright, who we've seen on the fringe of ODI selection. NCN.
Both Marshes.
Yeah, both Marshes. Mark Klinger's there as well. And Ashton Turner is one I think could be a big player in this side. He's scored well in Shield cricket, and I think he'll be an interesting addition to the sort of lower order. But yeah, I think the Scorchers, who finished fourth last year, will be looking to be in and around that sort of position again.
Yep. It'll be interesting to see if Cameron Bancroft can get back into form with a bit of, I wouldn't say hit and giggles, but certainly no pressure on him to bat for sessions. So hopefully he can hit himself into some form. Will be very interesting to see whether Ian Bell converts into a explosive 2020 batsman, or if he continues along being the nudger and nerdler that he was for England. Mm-hmm. Obviously very effective in the 2020 and one day sides for England when he was at the peak of his powers, but will be interesting to see whether or not he can still do that, because if he can like anchor the innings for 10 or 12 overs, they've certainly got the hitting power around him to go crazy.
I think the big problem for the Scorchers will be around who's going to be available in that squad. You've got Jason Behrendorf, who's going to miss the first month with a leg injury. Nathan Coulter-Nile with a back injury, who may well actually miss the whole tournament. They'll lose David Wiley to England contention after five games, while, of course, you know, both the Marsh brothers are going to be, you know, on the fringe of contention for Australian selection throughout that period as well. So if worse comes to worse and they lose all of those guys through various periods, they could be very threadbare very quickly. There'll be a lot of pressure on the guys that do remain. But you're going to have some constants, your Voges, Agars, Bancrofts, Hilton Cartwright, who probably wants to have a big tournament to sort of cement his name at the forefront of selectors' minds moving forward. I like the addition of Mitchell Johnson. If you look at the attack, if you've got a full team with Behrendorf, Johnson, Joel Parris, James Muirhead, Mitchell Marshall, all available, that's a very strong bowling lineup, and they could restrict some teams pretty consistently, I think. But I think availability will be the big one for the Scorchers, to be honest with you.
Yeah. And also the form of Mitchell Johnson, because if they're going to rely on him to be their spearhead, he can't have one of those awful periods where he bowls to the left and bowls to the right.
Yeah, I mean, two big concerns on Mitchell Johnson. One, the moustache is gone. So that's always a big concern.
There goes 10 Ks.
Yeah, that's a concern. And I saw in the paper he sort of said he wanted to have a bit of fun. He didn't want to be big, bad, mean Mitchell Johnson. He wanted to enjoy his cricket. And I thought, well, look, he played his best cricket when he was big, bad, mean Mitchell Johnson. And I think that's what the Scorchers probably want, is big, bad, mean Mitchell Johnson steaming in and pitching a couple of short ones and concerning a few batsmen in terms of physicalness rather than, or physicality rather than just sheer bowling. But
if you can bowl 150 Ks, scare the crap out of batsmen, break Graham Smith's hand twice in 6 months or something, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How is he not having fun?
Yeah, well, I mean, if I could do that, I would be having fun all the time.
Exactly.
I always wanted to be a fast bowler.
How is being a bully not enjoyable?
Exactly. I'm going to cut that bit of audio out and just play that constantly, though. next time something goes on, I'm just going to be like, well, my friend Vishnu said, how is being a bully not fun? If he is having a bit of fun, if he is enjoying himself, I suppose he could be an important weapon as well, particularly if he finds that form, as you said, and avoids the left and the right stuff and a bit of the G-ups on the on away games. He could be a big weapon.
Yeah, I think we can leave it at that with the Scorchers. Yeah. They'll either burn hot or burn very, very quickly. Moving to your patch of the country, who do you think is going to do better, Sixers or Thunder?
Well, I'm naturally inclined to back the defending champions, the Sydney Thunder, the pride of Sydney, the team that took BBL cricket in this city to a new level as the Sixers flamed out last year to finish dead last and embarrass the fine city of Sydney. The Thunder upheld the fine cricketing traditions of New South Wales and the fine cricketing traditions of Western Sydney to dominate the BBL, finish 6-4, and champions playing out of Spotless Stadium in the Golden West. I think the Thunder, this is going to sound weird because I'm in the middle of writing an article where the headline is literally Thunder, flash in the pan or consistent storm. So I've got concerns. Jacques Callis and Mike Hussey both retiring are the big problems, alongside Andre Russell, who's got a little issue around allegedly failing to inform drug authorities of his whereabouts on 3 or more occasions.
He's done a Rio Ferdinand.
That's the first thing I thought. I almost had a picture of him hopping over a fence at some point. Allegedly. Just throw that in there in case. No one wants to sue a podcast that's got 400 listeners, but come on. Let's.
No assets, yeah.
They've got a young guy, the Sixers, who in Sam Billings, who a lot of people won't know much about. He actually came out and played for Penrith Cricket Club a few years ago and had a decent knock at it. Young Englishman. And I really like the look of him. He's got a good technique. He's very strong, very stable. And I think if he gets a consistent run alongside Jason Roy, the other Englishman, I think he could be a big player for the Sixers. Obviously captained by Moses Enriquez. He of Mitchell Starc interviewing Spotify fame. I don't know if you saw that one, but he was clearly not listening to Spotify. I don't want to suggest what he may have been doing, but I don't think he was listening to Spotify. But the big outs are the two for both these sides. As we said, Jacques Callis and Mike Hussey out for the Thunder, but the Sixers lose Michael Lum, who can be a very devastating top-order batsman, and they lose the people's champion, Ed Cowan. Possibly one of the greatest unsung heroes of Australian cricket, will be a huge loss for the Sixers. If for nothing else, but his tendency to sneak off and grab an ice cream cone. But
that was probably like the most Australian of pictures. Yeah.
It was for those who haven't seen it, we'll put it on our Facebook page. It's North Sydney Oval playing for the Blues. Ed's just decided to hop the fence and grab himself a bit of the old Mr. Whippy soft serve ice cream. Still got the Blues gear on, still got the hat on.
He was supposed to be fielding.
Yeah,
at just fine leg.
Grab a quick ice cream.
He's just convinced the ice cream guy to give him a free cone and then taken a bite and come back into the field of play, still holding his ice cream in his left hand and ready to chase after a ball it came his way.
That is quintessentially Australian cricket. Grab a quick ice cream, pop back on, she'll be right, no issues. I haven't seen Ed Cowan picked up anywhere, so I think he might be a loss to the BBL for this year, which will be pretty disappointing. But the Sixers have a strong squad. You've got Sean Abbott, Jackson Bird, Doug Bollinger, Johan Boyta, Ryan Carters, Brad Haddin back for another dig. The problem is you'll have guys like Hazelwood, Lyon, Maddison, O'Keefe and Starc who are going to be on the fringe of Australian selection. So if they lose guys like that over the tournament, they'll certainly lose plenty of strength. But I think someone to watch will be someone like Joe Menny, who's going to point to prove after his axing in the first test. If you want to read a little bit more about my thoughts on that, head to realsport101.com. I literally just wrote an article on that this afternoon, so that should be published on the website shortly. But there'll be another side that's very much down to who gets on the field. And just to throw the klaxon out there, another of Penrith Cricket Club's finest in Jordan Silk will be representing the Sixers as well. But Vish, what are your thoughts on the men in magenta?
I can only hope that they both Sydney sides lose. to put it perfectly. The Sixers will be I think Brad Haddin and Jordan Silk will probably be their most, I would say, relied upon players, whether or not they're actually reliable. But Sam Billings is going to be one hell of a player, especially for England. But whether or not he can adapt to Australian pitches in this Australian conditions to make a truly, you know, season-defining performances out of him will be interesting. But he's certainly capable. Ryan Carter's, I don't know, I keep seeing him more on social media than actually out on the cricket field. Is that just me, or is he...
No, I think you're right there. I sort of thought to myself the other day, I know he came to New South Wales looking for a gig and had some good knocks, particularly in Shield cricket, but he sort of seems to have faded out of favour a little bit lately.
Johan Botha as well is, I suppose, you know, they've kind of looked to... bring in a bit of experience, given that, you know, they might be short of their Australian contingent.
He's kind of handy as well in that he's got the Australian citizenship now too.
Yeah, so he doesn't count as an import. What do you think of Stephen O'Keefe? Is he still a match winning bowler?
He certainly can be. I don't think he's lost that from his game. The problem for me is it hasn't happened consistently enough. He can come along and have those performances where he thrusts himself right back into the spotlight and puts a bit of pressure on someone like Nathan Lyon, who the selectors always seem like they're really looking for an opportunity, an excuse to drop him almost. He certainly comes along and has those games, and then he seems to die away a little bit, and he'll have you, even in 2020 level, he'll have you none for 30, none for 40, none for 50, where he has no real impact on the game. So, yeah, he certainly has the ability to win games, but I think he can go missing just a little too often as well. I'd certainly prefer young Arjun Nair at the Thunder. For those who don't know Arjun, he's only 18. He's an off-break bowling all-rounder from Sydney's West, who's shone for the Cricket Australia 11 over the summer. Put up 67 against the Vics. Took 3-15 against Western Australia. This kid's an exciting prospect. For those who've seen him, he's a very exciting prospect. I certainly like the look of him. Big issue for the Thunder. I like the fact that the bulk of the attack, your Farwood Ahmeds, Alistair McDermott, Clint Mackay, Gurinder Sandhu, they're going to be there consistently through the tournament. Injury notwithstanding, of course, they're not going to lose too many guys to international duty, potentially Pat Cummins, depending on what's going on there, and of course Usman Khawaja, who we might not even see in a Thunder shirt, which is sort of always the risk you run, I suppose, with the BBL. But the contingent of the side, the core of the side should be there. Your Curtis Pattersons and Ben Roarers as well in the batting lineup alongside Aidan Blizzard. They'll be there week in, week out, and I think that's the best
thing. Shane Watson as well.
Yeah, I think he's got an injury at them. I think he's going to miss the start of the tournament. But I believe once he comes back, I think he'll provide a lot of experience as well.
I especially love reading in this write-up where it just says Watson, open brackets, calf. That's been like the story of his career.
I actually thought that was his name at one point. Watson, open brackets, calf, close brackets. Well, that's an odd name, but you know, who am I to judge? Oh, that's harsh. For a guy who got so much criticism, I get a lot of criticism because I certainly was at the forefront of bagging Watto for a long time. And then, of course, he came to the Thunder and my sister sort of put it to me. She said, you know, you can't cheer for Watson. And straight up, I just said, oh, no, I've always liked Shane. Been a big fan of Shane. I've always backed this guy, you know, against all the odds, you know. To me, he's just a little Aussie battler.
It's like familial ribbing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you can take the piss out of your family, but you still love.
That's it. I mean, I can take the piss out of Watto if I want to, but if someone else wants to take the piss, they're going to have a problem because you know, he's one of the Thunder's finest. He's part of that inaugural Sydney Thunder BBL 05 championship winning squad. So, no, I won't hear a bad word about Watto. That's for sure. Now, in terms of prediction, I want three predictions from you. I want winner of the tournament. I want...
Stars.
You were going to say that. I want highest run scorer and I want highest wicket taker in the tournament. Just throw it straight on you there.
Okay, so reassessing winner stars. Most runs. Ooh. That's going to be interesting. Who's going to bat for enough games? Don't think it'll be any of the Aussie guys who are playing in the one day test. I might actually say Cameron White.
Cam White, yeah, big tournament from Cam.
Yep. And the most wickets, I'm gonna go for. This is actually a hard one.
It is. As soon as I said it, I thought, oh God.
I would like to see Mitchell Johnson take a whole bunch of wickets, but I don't think he will. I might actually say Gurinder Sundu.
Oh, that was mine. I had Gur in my head the whole time. I thought, I think Gurinder's going to be a big man, so I'll change it. I think the winners will be the Stars as well. I wanted to say Thunder, but I think the Stars have got the best squad in the league. So I think they'll probably be the ones to win it. Most runs, I'm going to wind back the clock and throw out Brad Hodge. I think Hodge will play, injury barring, of course, he'll play the whole tournament. And I think he'll bat pretty high up the order for the Strikers. So I think he'll get the chance to score a few runs. The biggest pressure from him, I think, will come from Kumar Sangakkara. I think we'll have a much better tournament. And I hope he does, because as I said, I have a lot of time for Kumar Sangakkara. Most wickets is definitely a tough one. As you said, the Aussie guys are sort of, the ODI and Test guys are going to be here or there. Otherwise, you'd look at someone like a Mitchell Starc just to come out and York teams out in ridiculous circumstances. But I'm going to throw up a bit of a weirder one. I'm going to go Joe Menny at the Sixers. I think he's got a point to prove, yeah. Joe, and he's a good, accurate, consistent bowler. I think if he starts tying people down for a period of time, he can certainly get a few wickets. And if not him, as I said, I was sort of thinking Gurinder Sandhu as well, but maybe throw Clint Mackay up there as a guy who gets wickets as well. So the great thing is there's plenty of choices across the thing. I think the BBL is so much fun. It's yep. a great amount. It's a great length of tournament. It's sort of on. You've got, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday nights. You've got not much else on telly after the test, or, you know, a couple of days out from a test match. You can flip it on and catch a bit of BBL cricket. I think it's fantastic. So this is one of my favourite times of the year.
No doubt. As well as the three questions you asked, who do you think will be the best performing import?
Best performing import? Well, Chris Gayle's gone. Otherwise, I would have thrown him out there.
Wait, thrown him out? Or thrown him out there?
I'll leave that ambiguous, so you can just sort of take it as you will. Best performing import. I'm going to throw up Brendan McCullum from the Brisbane Heat. I think I think McCullum, he'll probably open the batting for the Heat. And if he opens the batting with Joe Burns or Alex Doolan potentially, I think they could have a couple of decent sized partnerships, potentially even a big partnership with Linney down the order. So I think he'll score a few runs and have a bit of an impact. So yeah, I'll throw Brendan McCullum up there. What about yourself?
I'm going Owen Morgan.
Owen Morgan, who's he playing for?
Fairweather fan. He's playing for the.
Is he really? I thought we'd let him go.
Yeah. No.
Oh, sweet. I honestly thought we'd let him go. I hope you're right. Fantastic.
He's playing the first half. And he's going to leave for the England ODI.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember reading something about that.
Although there is some talk that he might not go for the England ODIs because his form has been horrible.
Which bodes well for a big BBL with the Thunder.
Yes. He needs to play well for the Thunder to make sure he can win for the England.
I like thinking of it like that. Yeah, this is your chance.
It's like,
come out and
it's like exile.
go out to the colony and score some runs, and then come back and do well. So that's the BBL for us. We thought we'd preview the BBL, given that it starts next week on the 20th. The Sydney Smash is on a Tuesday night, but great timing. Just sort of a week out from Christmas, get a chance to get the BBL into full swing. We've had the girls on as well, which has been good. So getting all North Sydney Oval and Des Moines Oval and places like that are always fantastic for a bit of cricket. The Aussies look like we're still cruising relatively all right in the test. 3 for 266. I have to be happy with that from day one so far.
Yep. Steve Smith with another 100.
Yeah, he's...
Peter Hanscom with a 50. And Renshaw did pretty well to start.
Yeah, Renshaw was on track for the innings of the day. He was fantastic. He looked a little nervy early on and had a couple of leading edges and some concerning shots, but throughout the loss of Warner and Khawaja, he steadied the ship with Smith fantastically. So I'm falling in love with Matty Renshaw, to be honest with you. I love this kid.
Yeah, certainly looks like he's got a massive future ahead of him, especially if he can, get rid of that playing inside the line of the ball, technical fault that Chris Rogers picked up on.
Yeah.
Especially if he can do that before the Ashes, he'll certainly be a much, much more dominant figure at the head of the innings, and certainly more solid looking than David Warner as well.
Yeah, you're not wrong there. Warner, disappointing to get out again for 32, but look, I won't dwell too much on the test because it will literally be yesterday's news by the time this podcast is live. You wanted to talk a little bit of England and India?
Yeah. How many times have you seen a side win the toss, bat first, score 400, and still lose by an innings?
Not very often.
Yeah, that's what happened to England last week. India's found another lower order centurion who batted with Virat Kohli for almost two sessions. He only came in after they'd passed the score and moved their total to over 600, which is absolutely crazy. We all thought that the era of bats dominating the ball by that much had kind of ended. But getting 631 and winning by an innings and 36 runs in this day and age on a, not a raging turner, but certainly on a turning wicket that both sides' bowlers certainly used, it's absolutely amazing. Let me just read out the top scorers from India's innings. Virat Kohli, 235. Murali Vijay, 136. And Yadav, 104. Now, that's not Umesh Yadav, the fast bowler. This is a relatively new kid. Let me just work on how to pronounce his first name. Jayant. Yeah, Jayant Yadav. He's actually, he's in the side for his off spin, but he can also hold a bat.
Well, it certainly sounds like it.
Yep, he's only played three test matches and already scored 100.
You can't argue with that. Now, in this regard, now I'll admit I don't watch a lot of test cricket outside Australia. I like watching ODIs and stuff, but I just don't have time to sit up all night and watch a lot of test cricket. But Jimmy Anderson, is it just about over for Jimmy Anderson now? He's going to miss the final test of this series in Chennai. It's the eighth test he's missed out of their last 23, including five this year. It's hard to see him coming back from that, particularly as a fast bowler, where the body's under so much pressure.
And he's losing speed and he's losing effectiveness. At the end of this test, he had the temerity, audacity, arrogance to say, Kohli only ever scores big hundreds at home. which is blatantly not true. And then Graham Smith on Twitter hilariously said, so in response to Jimmy Anderson's kind of petulant outburst, said, well, does that mean you can only bowl well at home as well, mate? Which is, you know, pretty much case in point. And I think they should be looking for another quick to take his spot. They probably have one already waiting in the wings in Chris Wokes.
Mm.
So between Wokes, Stokes and Broad, that should be enough. But, you know, they'll probably want to give Anderson a farewell at a home test pretty quickly, I would think.
Yeah, I think that'll sort of be the end of that. I noticed Liam Plunkett still sort of floating around. They've got young Reece Topley, the left-arm quick from Hampshire as well, who...
And they got Steve Finn as
well. Yeah, he's sort of forgotten man, Steve Finn. He sort of tends to fall out of thought almost, but he can... He's only, what, 26, 27 or something like that? So he's probably got a few years left in him. Jimmy Anderson's, what, 35 now? But, yeah, 34, I think. So that'll be interesting to see. Their strength at the moment is obviously their batting lineup. The Poms, looking forward to the Ashes. They've got some young guys coming through. Your Keaton Jennings and Haseeb Hameeds, and even guys like Gary Ballance and Sam Billings who are in their mid twenties. They're going to be big impactful players. Joe Root, for Christ's sake, is 25 or 26 or something like that now. So,
and it will be interesting to see how long Alistair Cook continues to be captain as well as opening bat, because as you said, Haseeb Hameed and Jennings both have done pretty well opening the batting.
Mm.
So it could mean Cook takes a little pressure off himself, drops down the order to 4 or 5 or even 6, or it could mean Cook chooses to retire, or it could mean that he stays where he is and the two younger guys have to fight it out for the other spot.
He is still, I mean, the last time I looked anyway, still relatively in form, though, Cook himself.
Yeah, of course, yeah. But he's of the Michael Clark generation in terms of age. So he's certainly the elder statesman of the batting circuit on the global stage, other than the Pakistani captain. Obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those things, you know, looking forward to the Ashes of 2017. We've got confirmation of a day-night test in Adelaide. So, you know, it's obviously still a long way away, but to start casting the eye over the England side and understanding where they are, we'll probably do that over the next few episodes of the show and just sort of really have a bit of a look at where the Poms are and who's coming through at that level as well, so that we can we really lead up to a big Ashes series, I suppose. But
Just while I have you here, just one last small thing. Did you hear the comments from Mitchell Johnson about day-night cricket?
I did not.
So he was asked today, I think it was either at a publicity for the BBL or his new book, you know, what he thought about the Ashes being played at night in a day-night test match. And he said, look, I don't think test cricket should be played at night, full stop. Completely disagrees with the whole concept of day-night test matches, and thinks it's almost an insult to the Ashes to be changing the format.
Oh, wow. That's a strong way to come out.
Yeah. What are your thoughts?
Look, I actually put an article up on Real Sport about this yesterday. I was against pink ball cricket and day-night test cricket at the start. I didn't like the thought of messing with test cricket. I still held it in this very sacred regard. But I sort of quickly understood that people like myself, you know, die-hard cricket people are always going to feel that way. But the restrictions on the audience and the restrictions on who you can put in test cricket in front of or getting more and more restrictive, and it was getting harder, and the crowds diminishing, the idea that Test cricket was starting to lose its appeal. I sort of got where it's coming from in the fact that, all right, let's take the pinnacle of the game and put it in that same sort of time slot as a BBL game, put it into that consumable section where younger generation and people who knock off work at 5:30, 6 o'clock can still get 2 or 3 hours of Test cricket, and put it into that, it's a terrible phrase, but snackable content, in that traditional Test match cricket, most of the action has been run and done by the time you get home from work. And, you know, you can check the internet, you can check the highlights, but the day's play, by the bulk at the very least, is over by the time you get home, and you're sort of just living vicariously through score updates and highlights and things like that, whereas you can get home at 5:30, 6:30, and you have 3 hours of Test cricket to enjoy. And Test cricket is still, to me, the pinnacle of the game. So the fact that we're putting the pinnacle of the game in front of more eyeballs has to be a good thing. And I know, you know, you look at people saying that it changes the way the game's played, changes tactics, but cricket, the one thing that's always been adaptable in cricket is tactics, you know. The thing, or, you know, when reverse swing became a big thing, or, I mean, it's not all that long ago in the scheme of the game that there was no 5-day format. It was play until there was a result. So the game has to adapt, and it has to put itself into, it doesn't have to mutate itself, but it has to put itself in a position where it can attract the biggest audience, and it can attract a platform where the biggest stars of the game can perform in front of more eyeballs. So I have no problem with it. In fact, I've sort of turned around and started to embrace it myself, to be honest with you.
Fair enough. I've certainly been for it ever since it was floated. I think it's a great idea to get more people watching Test cricket. Certainly challenging the batsmen more to either play through those twilight hours or adapt to the way the ball and the conditions change as it gets colder into the afternoon and evening. So I certainly love where cricket has gone from, you know, having very low crowds for the non-Ashes and non-Indian series to getting, you know, packed out crowds for a Test against New Zealand.
Yeah, I mean that is a very valid point. It's a big thing. You've got the big three, which is Australia, India, and England, and wherever they go, whatever they're playing, that's going to be, if not a sellout, it's going to be a packed house. There's a huge Indian population in Australia. There's an expat English population. There's a lot of travelling fans, and Australians relish those contests. And South Africa, to a slightly lesser extent, based on probably more an on-the-pitch rivalry than anything. There's been some really good cricket played between those Australia and South Africa over the last few years. But good teams like Sri Lanka and Pakistan would come out and the crowds would dwindle dreadfully. And the interest would just fall away. And it's markedly noticeable. And I think by day three of the test in Hobart that we went to, Australia v Sri Lanka, I think the crowd was less than 2,000, which, and I hope it's not a huge place, but it was like being at a park cricket game here in Sydney. There was, you almost felt like you could go and grab the car and reverse it up to the gate and watch it from the fence, you know, like it was almost like being at a park cricket game. There was just no one there, which is fine when you're, you know, you want to have a few drinks on the hill and hop straight into a cab and not deal with a big crowd, but that's not what you want from Test cricket.
True.
Anyway, we've sort of rolled on for another episode. Do you have anything you'd like to cover before we wrap up for episode 4?
Not much, really. Looking forward to seeing how Pakistan cope without Muhammad Amir, who's was stretchered off the field just before he started the podcast.
It looks like he has come back. Just running through the ball-by-ball commentary, it looks like he is back, but he... copping a bit of a hiding. Peter Hanscom and Steve Smith still there, have gone after him just a little bit, so he might not be 100% fit.
Following at full pace, yeah.
So,
but it will be interesting to see what Pakistan do and whether or not you know, they can put up a stiff test against the Aussies and really show why they were ranked number one at the start.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I kind of do hope the same. I'm always, you know, going to hope and pray for an Australian victory. But if we're 4 or 5 down for 450, 500 by, you know, sometime tomorrow and the test is out of their hands early on, it could set up for a very long series. Jim Maxwell said it on the ABC grandstand just before the start of play, and he thinks it'll be a comprehensive 3-0 win to Australia. And I think if Pakistan start poorly with the bat and they're chasing a big total, I think he could well be right. But I'd like to see a little bit of a fight. I don't want to see three-day test matches and things wrapped up quickly. So I'm hoping we'll see a bit of a fight from the Pakistan batting lineup and guys like Yunus Khan and Misbah-ul Haq, who've, you know, been so vital to that side for so long, can dig in and score a few runs with a bit of luck.
Yep. Yeah, and we'll be interesting to see how our bowlers do up there with the pink ball on the new surface at the Gabba. Yeah, but other than that, looking forward to the BBL.
Absolutely, yeah. We'll certainly be recapping and talking about the BBL throughout the rest of the summer. That'll be a big one for us. So we'll see just how wrong our predictions were by the end of the tournament. But I didn't predict the Thunder to win, so I'll definitely be wrong when they do. But we'll leave it there for episode 4 of the Summer of Cricket with Straubs and Snew. It's been an absolute pleasure once again, Vishnu.
You too, mate. It's been great having a chat, and I look forward to catching up with you again next week.
Excellent, guys, and thanks once again for listening. Of course, we appreciate it. We know you don't have to listen to the podcast, but anyone who does, of course, we sincerely appreciate it. Have a lovely weekend, and we'll be back same time, same place next week for the Summer of Cricket with Straubs and Schnoo. Recorded and produced by Strawberry Podcast Solutions.